Hello, Summer of Trades continues on Sabres Live today.
What are we trading?
Not because of the word trades, but because it's still summer. I'm wondering, Marty, whether you could actually, without looking it up, because we were told this was going to be Summer of Trades.
Yeah.
Do you know what the last trade was in the NHL?
The last trade in the NHL may have been, would that have been the Charlie Coyle, Miles Wood trade?
Nope.
Okay.
You'll never get it without looking it up.
No, I'm blanking, but it probably was not very significant.
No, it's like 11 days ago, July 25th, the Sharks acquired Oscar Olsson from Colorado for Daniil Gushin. So.
Okay, well, I'm glad I didn't get it, because if I did, I would want you to tell me to get a life.
The two of them combined are younger than me. The two of them combined have played less than 20 NHL games or less than 25. But yeah,
well, I thought you were meaning I'm trading my Sabres gear today for Bills gear, because I'm all ready for Hard Knocks tonight and really excited about that. And mostly because I have not watched any of those behind-the-scenes type of shows since we appeared with the Rangers on Road to the Winter Classic in 2012. So it was the Flyers hosting us. The Rangers went to Philly, and the cameras were following us for a month, you know, in the month of December leading up to it. And I watched it mostly because I wanted to know what parts of us getting yelled at by Tortorella were they going to use, and what reaction did they catch, right, from the players in the locker room. So I would think that the Bills players are going to be watching tonight because they want to know, hey, did I, you know, make a funny, you know, face, or did I react in a funny way to certain things? But it's probably a lot lighter in training camp than it is in the middle of the regular season when it comes to filming behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Are you anticipating that we will ramp up any trade talks in the next few weeks?
No.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, if, and not that these go hand in hand, but it feels like forever ago that we talked about Marco Rossi.
Yeah.
And how hard it's going to be for him to get his deal with Minnesota based on how they publicly spoke of, you know, where they see him, blah, blah, blah. But the three prominent remaining RFAs are Luke Hughes, Marco Rossi, and Mason McTavish.
Yeah.
Like, it's August. What should we be thinking about these three? Their agents.
They're fantastic players in their own right. Like, Luke Hughes, okay, is, you know, different in the way that he was positional. Marco Rossi is, in my opinion, probably the most talented one. But Mason Marchman just was traded.
Mason McTavish.
Mason McTavish was just traded. But I always...
This is twice this summer, yes. We're keeping score.
Did I write Marchman? Okay, I wrote Marchman on my sheets for today, so I'm good. I'm in the right place. But they're three different players, but I think they're going to stick with their teams. I don't think they're going to get traded. I don't think we're going to get the ramp up of the trades that we thought we were going to get.
Okay, this was Marty's awkward way of saying that Dallas is our team of the day, and they no longer employ.
Let's get in my team of the day, because I am like, woohoo!
As you might have noticed,
I was going with everything else,
doing everything I could to stall from getting into our team of the day.
I like to ask those questions. Why would the Anaheim Ducks move on from Mason McTavish, right? Like, that's a question that...
I can answer that.
Okay, go ahead. Because I just don't see how they would move on from that quality of a player right now.
I agree with your logic and from their position. But it was also suggested that in another one of these wild trades of summer, one that was mildly surprising, actually, but then not so much, Dakota Joshua going to Toronto.
Yeah.
Some rationale apparently behind that, and I can't see it happening, but the Canucks want to bolster the middle of their lineup. Mason McTavish would be perfect. So if you're sitting here going, well, what are the Ducks doing? Well, what if they are actually fielding real offers? I don't know what Vancouver could possibly give that would make Anaheim in this situation when they're trying to build and they've got infinite cap space. Like, yeah. Just lock the player up unless you don't like him and unless you think you can somehow win a home run deal with a team like Vancouver, who is openly saying they still need to address their forward group.
Especially since Anaheim added, like we just did that team of the day late July, but it was Kreider, Mikael Granlund, Peter Mrazek in a trade, obviously saw John Gibson go, but they have, you know, Lucas Dostal. So I see Anaheim as wanting to take a step forward and wanting to take a step forward with Mason McTavish. Now, there's always,
right.
Are we far on numbers? Can we get closer? When is the, you know, the button, Duffer, let's talk about the buttons that we have to press sometimes to change things. But when is that panic button going to be pressed by either the player or the team, right? Mm-hmm. And I go back to tonight. I don't think we're going to see it on our knocks, and I don't want to – I'm sure they talked about it plenty on this station, and they will again with One Bills Live. But, the James Cook situation and his contract, he's got another year left, but he wants a new deal, and he's – holding in right now, not participating, but when's that pressure button? When is Mason McTavish pressure button with Anaheim saying he's their second line center right now? Mm-hmm. When is Luke Hughes' pressure button with the New Jersey Devils knowing that, okay, well, if you're the Devils, you were talking about potentially moving Dougie Hamilton, but you can't do it if you don't have Luke Hughes. Like there's some pressure points. I feel like Marco Rossi doesn't have the same pressure point because Minnesota's saying, you're not one of our top guys. You're not Kirill Kaprizov. Who they need to extend, and they need to have some money for him after this season. But
well, everybody's going to have money because of the cap going up. Like when we get to our team of the day, Dallas, I mean, we talked about their situation as free agency was approaching. The fact of the matter is, they're likely to look the same next year when the cap goes up and they retain everybody, unless they make some blockbuster deal either ahead of the playoff run or on the heels of another failed attempt to get to the final. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But I'm fascinated by the Hughes commentary here because, like, what if they are playing the scenario out where, look, we're going to continue to try to move Dougie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And until we do, we're not going to do the Hughes deal because Hughes' camp is recognizing where the cap is going. They don't want to sell short the potential earnings percentage-wise within the, you know, from an individual player within the cap, all that kind of stuff. These are all the things that are floating around, and it's just there's not many players left to attach this discussion to. As we sit here in the first week of August, the three guys again are basically Hughes, Rossi, and McTavish. And I just wonder as time goes on, you know, how much more, well, I don't know, revisiting perhaps other teams do on players like this, or they've set their course end of June, early July, and they're like, we're good.
I feel like it's more like we're good. But also, it's, like, this is Luke Hughes, for example's first time getting at this, okay, out of entry level deal, and now trying to see, should I bridge? Should I go long term? And the Devils only have about $6 million, a little over $6 million under the cap. So would Luke Hughes be looking at $7.5-8 million?
Easily with the cap going up.
With the cap going up, but now you can't do it right now. So you're trying to tell him, like, we don't have a deal on Dougie Hamilton right now, and we're not going to take a bad deal just to free up that cap space. So maybe they're pushing the short-term deal, 2 years at 5.5, just so that they're under the cap, and then they say you're going to – this is why it's interesting. And if you're Luke Hughes, you're sitting there saying, I know I'm going to get my money. It's just a matter of how do I get there to be able to maximize my earnings. He's not taking less than $6 million on a long-term deal. Definitely not.
100%.
He's probably at $8-8.5 million, and he's that good. Mm-hmm. So New Jersey's in a tough spot when you look at Hughes. Anaheim is in a weird spot with McTavish. I don't feel the sense that Minnesota is in any panic mode with Marco Rossi. They have Matt Boldy. They have Zuccarello. They have Kaprizov. Both of those, Kaprizov and Zuccarello, need extension if they're going to continue to be a Wild. I think Kaprizov will get it done. I don't know about Zuccarello, but there's plenty there for Minnesota to continue on and just say to Rossi, yeah, just, you know, you can be on the sideline until you get to where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll get to Minnesota within the next 2 weeks in our team of the day, so I don't want to go too far down that path. But, I mean, Zuccarello's 37. He can't even be talked about in this situation, really. Like,
he'll take whatever is left, right? And if there is anything left,
but
he's still performing, he's still producing. You don't want him to leave, but you're also not going to pay him what he's been making. And you know, I mean, he's not going to be in the same conversation as Boldy, Rossi, and all those guys. Right now, Zuccarello is already at 4.1. He signed a 35 and over contract. You're not signing him for.
He's not getting more than that. No.
No.
Not when you look at our team of the day and realize the 82-point performer Matt Duchene took the biggest hometown discount without question. You cannot find a veteran player in the NHL that would have led his team in scoring with a point a game that would take a deal like this. So, without further ado, Dallas is our team of the day. And they look very familiar. And they will look very familiar. For a lot of years to come.
I looked at key additions. I have a blank space for key additions this offseason. Like, they lost players, but they don't have... I mean, they did the Rantanen deal last year, and it's big, obviously. But I don't see any additions that will change this team other than the coach. And we'll talk about the coach coming up. But my mind was blown, Duffer. When I look at the Dallas Stars last season, you mentioned Matt Duchene, 82 points in 82 games. Great season by Matt Duchene, okay? He's 34 years old. Jason Robertson had 35 goals, expected of him to be their highest goal scorer, but I think he could get to 40 easily, right? In the last year of his deal, RFA at the end of the year, that's why all the... But Tyler Seguin was technically the highest points per game player. Mm-hmm. He only played 20 games, but he had 21 points. Like, Tyler Seguin and Matt Duchene were the two most consistent performer on that team last year.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mind blown. Like, completely, like...
Very, very, very small sample for Seguin, and obviously it didn't duplicate itself in the playoffs. But the Seguin deal is still... It's a bit challenging. There's 2 years remaining at 9.85, and it's no move. But, again, they're under the cap now by less than $500,000.
Yes.
They've got all their guys. They're good. And when the cap goes up to 104 next year, you can give Robertson and Harley reasonable raises, and they're still going to fit. Like, not the, and so you wrap that around the core, and with me saying that, that's players that have at least 4 years still to go on their current deals. They have Rantanen, Hintz, Wyatt Johnston, Duchene, Haskinen, Lindell, and Ottinger. And then presumably you get Robertson and Harley on new deals as the gradual nature of, you know, Seguin comes off the books and whatever, whatever. But they're really not going to have to worry about it. So it does beg the question, though. After three straight conference final losses, are they positioned to be better and get through? And regular seasons don't equate to playoff success. So we don't need to sit here and say the Stars are going to be a 120-point team and be unstoppable in the regular season. Who knows? This could be late 70s Islanders, where you have disappointment, and then all of a sudden it clicks.
It clicks.
It could. It's unlikely in today's cap world, but it could.
They have the team to do it, and I look at the Western Conference right now, and I'm saying, okay, so the last few years, like, Winnipeg has had great regular seasons. Colorado, okay, but, you know, the Avalanche were right there, about to beat Dallas in the first round this year, other than Game 7 when Mikko Rantanen has a hat trick in the third period. Vegas, the Kings, Edmonton, the Oilers. I mean, there is teams out there that you're like, the Dallas Stars are peaking, but they're peaking when all the teams around them are really good. Now,
and if they lose, nobody's like, nobody except, you know, in the in market, obviously, people are going to be super critical when you don't win. But like, to me, there's no shame in what has happened with Dallas. You went to the conference finals three straight times. Your roster looks amazing.
Yes.
And throw your chips in and see what happens.
Like, they had a fantastic line of Mikael Granlund, Roope Hintz, and Mikko Rantanen, the finish line, right? Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, we got to move on from Granlund. We have Jason Robertson. We have Wyatt Johnston. We have Maverick Bork that has to play a little bit more of a role now in the third line. We have Sam Steele. Like, they have great players. Mm-hmm. And over the last 3 years, they have been third in goals for in the league and fifth in goals against in the league. Like, they're a top team. They're top five in goals for and goals mm-hmm. against. Like, you compare that to the Sabres. The Sabres are ninth in goals for, in the last 3 years. But they're also 26th in goals against. So it's not just the offense of the Dallas Stars that has been great. It's their defense. It's their goaltender. Jake Oettinger is still a top-end goaltender. Mm-hmm. But he's had some moments, but defensively with Miro Heiskanen. And we saw last year, Shayna Goldman on this show has said the Dallas Stars 5-on-5 were no good without Miro Heiskanen. The second half of the year when he was gone, and in the playoffs, he came back, but was he 100%? It was not the same thing. Miro Heiskanen is fantastic. Thomas Hurley. I heard some people say Thomas Hurley could make over $9 million. What? Thomas Hurley. What did I say?
Hurley, like the brand.
Thomas Hurley. He's from down the road in like Elmira, you know.
Got a lot of roads around here.
He's down the road in Elmira. He is a guy that people are saying will make more than Miro Heiskanen. They will make $9 million plus. I mean, that's significant moving forward. So you talk about Robertson and Hurley. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be a big jump in where their cap numbers will be.
I'm guessing you don't believe in internal salary caps anymore players. Well,
you can't now because it's going up too high to say, hey, nobody's going to make more than, you know, player X. Like, it can't happen.
But if Hurley signed his extension today, does he actually get more than Heiskanen, or does one more great year of Hurley put himself in a position to soar past Heiskanen?
I would not give him more than Miro Heiskanen right now, which is almost $8.5 million. Mm-hmm. I think that Hurley right now, $8.25 million. Mm-hmm. I'm good with it. Another really good year of him. I mean, before the Four Nations face-off last year, not a lot of people even knew who he was. And then he gets called, like, I'm just saying casual fans, right? Yeah. Like, we watch the Dallas Stars, we watch the teams, we watch everybody. But casual fans are like, who is this Thomas Hurley? And, well, okay, like, Syracuse, New York, Elmira, New York, whatever. Like, he's from that area. But he is with Team Canada mm-hmm. because he played with the Canadian program earlier. Like, you know, he's got dual. And he gets called from Jim Neal, and he's like, hey, we may need you. He goes to the Four Nations, looks really good. And then no Miro Heiskanen in the second half of the season. All we're seeing is Hurley, Hurley, Hurley with Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to see him one more year to give him 9.5. But right now, I would give him 8 if I was Dallas. I'd try to get him at 8 and say, listen, like, this will give you 7 years at $8 million. Give you $56 million. Mm-hmm. You got to play on that a little bit right now.
Can you name the five coaches Dallas has had between the two Glenn Gullitzen stints as head coach?
Okay, so, well, Pete DeBoer, Jim Montgomery, Rick Bowness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's five. So I said Pete DeBoer, Jim Montgomery, Rick Bowness, Lindy.
Yep.
That's four.
And his adversary.
Ken Hitchcock?
Yes, for 1 year.
Hitch. 1 year of Hitch. Wow.
So you have this incredible
I have four for five with a little help, so that's good. I'm pretty happy.
You have this incredible consistency in Dallas with Jim Neal. But you have all these coaches. Like, they've been in the playoffs 8 of the last 12 years, but they've had 5 coaches, you know? And here they are going to Gullitzen again. after a okay first tenure, uneventful couple of years. He's been in the
NHL. Very eventful tenure in Calgary, though, because he was shown many, many times over in the morning skate where he yelled at the Flames and threw the stick like over and over and there into the second level, like over the penalty box and into the suites or whatnot. So he had an eventful stint in Calgary, uneventful in Dallas. He's and a good coach, but Duffer, they moved on from Pete DeBoer. The guy that has gone to the conference finals 6 of the last 7 seasons, starting with San Jose.
So what? Gullitson was in the Stanley Cup final back-to-back years.
I know, but he was an assistant coach. He's not a head coach.
Just saying.
Pete DeBoer, over his last 7 years, he has gone to the conference finals 6 times. Mm-hmm. San Jose, Vegas, and Dallas. That is pretty incredible.
So what are you saying?
What I'm saying is that...
I mean, are you saying this is the wrong move after everything that went down after DeBoer's comments?
Right now, there would be a lot of teams that are keeping a text message contact with Pete DeBoer, just saying, you know what, Pete? Like, I don't know where it's going to go this year, but we got you in mind for something. Like, he is the best by far coach available right now. His success is speaks for itself. Oh, I know. It ended badly in Dallas. What he did to Jake Oettinger in the last game and his comments afterwards and doubling down on it 2 days later and whatnot was not good. Jim Neal had no choice to a certain extent to make a change. Mm-hmm. But Pete DeBoer is a fantastic coach, and he's shown that in the success he's had with 3 different teams over the last 7 years, going to the conference finals 6 times. Now, he's only gone to the finals once in those 6 times, and it was with San Jose Sharks.
That was a loss to Pittsburgh. Yes. He also had the New Jersey loss to L.A. back in the day.
That was when they beat us. I hated Pete DeBoer.
That's why I'm bringing it up, baby.
Man, Adam Henrique, I hate him too. And they're still, Adam Henrique is still in the league, and he scored that goal in overtime game 6 in New Jersey. At the
Adam Henrique also in back-to-back cup finals.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for making me feel really good today. But I have to tell you this though, for how much I hated Pete DeBoer playing against him, we had that huge brawl, the Rangers and the Devils, where at the start of the game, you had Carter, Bolton and Jansen for the Devils against Prust, Rupp and Stu Bickel for us. It was everybody on the ice at MSG, dropped the puck. It was awesome. And Pete DeBoer was fiery and Tortorella were fiery. They were going at each other. But I've gotten to talk to Pete DeBoer in the locker room, outside the locker room, crossing in the hallway or whatnot. Great guy. Mm-hmm. Intense. I like a coach that's intense. That's... I just feel like he was his own demise at the end of the year this year, because he'd still be one of the best head coach in the National Hockey League if he was coaching Dallas.
Dallas is our team of the day. Still lots to dissect. Let's stay on the coach path here until we take the break. What can Gullitson do? What can he get out of this group?
His number one job is to go out and with Jake Oettinger and a few others that were criticized by the Pete DeBoer plan over the last year is to build them up. They're a fantastic team. But I think it starts with your goaltender. Your goaltender was good, but your goaltender wasn't great, right? If Thatcher Demko had been healthy this year, it would have been a real conversation between Oettinger, Swayman, and Demko as to who are the 2 goalies behind Connor Hellebuyck at Team USA. Like, if you're Jake Oettinger, you should be thinking, I want to be the starter, and I should compete with Connor Hellebuyck, but it wasn't the case. I think you have to build back. If you're Glenn Gullitson, you have to get right back to building up Jake Oettinger so he is in that conversation for Team USA starter coming up at the Olympics this year. That's your number one thing. But it's hard. Like, I mean, you look at, I mentioned the last 3 years. They had the most points 327 points in the NHL over the last 3 years, mm-hmm. most by any team.
Right.
They were one of the best offensively, one of the best defensively. You're Glenn Gallitzin. You're hoping I can just manage a few individual, get them their confidence, and cruise control. Let's go. We got to keep the same path.
Seems odd, right? We're going to hire you. Just come in and be nice to our goalie and don't touch anything else.
Pretty much. That would be the interview. Like Jim Neal would be like, Glenn, here's the plan. You have to make sure you get a good relationship with your goalie, and the rest of the the rest of the team is a well-oiled machine. Let them go. Don't even install your own system. Go to the guys and say, what did you guys play? We played a 1-2-2 in this situation, 2-1-2. How about the power play? We did this on the power play. Don't even adapt to the players. Don't have the players adapt to you.
Honestly, it is like you've lived it. Like you've seen coaches and coaching changes. And I don't know. Like, okay, Ottinger's feelings were hurt. But like, for guys like Matt Duchene that had almost a career year or a career year at his age, and other guys who have, like, is it not kind of like, this sucks that Pete's not back? Like, how do you balance that? Because obviously you're going to stand up for your teammate, your goalie. You know what I mean? But it's still got to be a disappointment for some of those players who have excelled under Pete DeBoer.
I feel that feeling is probably more geared towards the veterans, the mm-hmm. Seguin, the Ben, the Duchene, that are looking at it and saying, man, like, I've had many coaches in the league, and I've had some tough years where we didn't have success, and this guy got us the success. Mm-hmm. Was he perfect? No, nobody is perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, I really look at it when after my third season with the Rangers, so we go, we lose in the first round year one, we lose in the conference finals year two, we lose in the second round year three. And then there was rumors that maybe Tortorella is not the guy for the Rangers. And they go to Alain Vigneault. Mm-hmm. And look, Alain Vigneault came in and changed a lot of things. And they went to the finals in 2014. Good for them. Like, that worked out. But the veterans in the locker room were like, man, Torts was good. Torts was great. Torts had us going the way we want. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the younger guys weren't so much on board, but it was... the younger guys are like, whatever, new coach, let's go. Yeah. Right? But if you have that experience, the Duchene, the Ben, the Seguin experience, you've had Montgomery, you've had DeBoer, you've had other coaches, other teams, you're like, this coach gets it. I think it's going to be harder for the veterans than it is for the Wyatt Johnson, the Jason Robertson, the Thomas Harley, the Miro Iskinen, the Jake Ottinger. Those guys will be, okay, let's go forward. But the veterans are going to have a little bit of a harder time.
Stars and Sabres will actually continue a longstanding tradition this year. We'll dive into that on our schedule when we come back. You can enter to win a key to the arena, including Sabres and Bandits season ticket memberships for the 25-26 season and a pair of tickets to 5 upcoming KeyBank Center live events. Just enter to win this one-of-a-kind prize at sabres.com/key. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
What are you doing on New Year's Eve?
Well, it depends at what time. Because until very, very late, I'll be working with you at Dallas Stars game in Dallas. Maybe, if the game ends in regulation, we'll have enough time to get out of the studio and go to the nearest pub and crack one open for midnight. Maybe. I don't know. It may be just a little too late.
2 straight years. Buffalo at Dallas. 8 Eastern on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, exactly. Should be done by 11.
May the tradition continue. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and the last game of the season, April the 15th, is Dallas at Buffalo.
At KeyBank Center, yes.
It could be a big game. Who knows? I anticipate Dallas will be comfortably in the playoffs by that point. You never know. I probably would have said the same thing about the Rangers last year. I would anticipate the Rangers to be comfortably in the playoffs last game of the season. But, so we got the Rangers, the first one. Dallas Stars, the last game. That's the bookends for the 82-game season this year. But, yeah, New Year's Eve again in Dallas. You and I will be in studio and with our crew, and maybe I'll reuse. Oh no, I don't have those hats I had last year.
Thank goodness, because they didn't fit me particularly well.
They didn't fit really well. Maybe I'll order New Year's stuff
early enough
that I'm not going to show up at the Dollarama the day of the game trying to scramble to get something. So maybe I'll order something early on for us.
I feel like producer Jeff had some nice garland for us over the holiday season last year.
Very nice garland over Christmas. That was good.
4-2, 4-2. Those were the scores last year between Buffalo and Dallas. The Sabres won the first go around at KeyBank in October. That was a strong start and an excellent finish by Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. And then they fell by that same 4-2 score on New Year's Eve when Wyatt Johnston had the game winner in the back half of period number three to break a 2-2 tie. So Dallas is our team of the day today as we roll on here on Sabres Live.
You mentioned Wyatt Johnson.
Okay? Yeah.
So Wyatt Johnson signed a significant deal. He's going to be in year one of that extension. So he signed that extension at the end of the season in March. It's a five-year deal, $8.4 million. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Wyatt Johnson had 24 goals as a 19-year-old, 32 and 33. I think they gave him a lot of money, knowing that he wasn't even two-thirds of the way done with his entry-level deal when they gave him that contract, and he had a good year last year. I think they were expecting better from Wyatt Johnson.
He had a tough playoff, that's all. His regular season was great. We talked about it yesterday. He was on that top 10 list of goal scorers from January 4th on.
Yes.
So that was part of the problem, was they had so many guys you were expecting to just keep going hot. And that's what the playoffs bring. All of a sudden, you stack a couple of zeros or ones in there, and you're not winning anymore. And that's what happened against Edmonton.
And you do that for six games, which in a regular season, you go through a couple of weeks where, and then, you know, you break free. You have like three games, you have, you know, 9 points, and you're like, okay, I'm back. But maybe you don't get that opportunity in the playoffs. And Wyatt Johnson had a very, very tough playoffs. But 8.4, I would think if I'm Dallas right now, I'm looking at Wyatt Johnson and Jason Robertson. I wish I would have saved a little bit of that for Jason Robertson. Potentially, I think he's a better player than Wyatt Johnson. But right now, they made the commitment. It's all about timing. When do you become a free agent? When do you have that money available? And when do you sign your extension?
And again, with the cap going up, I don't see this being a problem for Dallas if they want to retain Harley and Robertson next year. I really don't. I think they're in the window. They can get it done. And they have
this
plenty
has to be
of
the work. Last year for Jamie Benn, though. It's a one-year deal at $1 million.
Well, the tricky part there is it's an incentive-laden deal. So that could eat into what they have fully available next year, right?
Yeah, there's $3 million of performance bonuses attainable for Jamie Benn. So if all of a sudden he hits all of it, let's say Jamie Benn hits all of it, $3 million more. Well, now you're getting penalized the next year. You're going to take that off your cap the next year. It may limit your ability, but Dallas is in a position right now where they're like, we have to do what we got to do. We want Jamie Benn. He's 36. He's a big part of our team. We'll give him $1 million base and $3 million bonuses. Maybe he makes four, but we'll roll the dice on that.
Would you imagine if they don't scale the mountain this year that Ben then finally ends his tenure in Dallas? And would they somehow, Tyler Seguin has full control of the situation, but do you think they would earnestly look to move off of Seguin and Ben? Again, this is imagining like worst case scenario. It's never a bad thing to go as far as they've gone. But what if the Stars are sitting there staring at four straight conference final ousters? They're not going to run the same thing back, are they?
I would have to see what the health.
I mean, you should, based on like, it would be amazing. Every team other than, you know, 28 others would, like 28 other teams would want that.
Listen, if we had this show in Dallas, we were called Dallas Live, the Stars Live, right? Instead of Sabres Live, Stars Live. And we had people complaining in the summertime on social media about, oh, can't get over the hump and can't get the finals. And we, you know, and we fire everybody, fire the GM, fire everybody. I'd be like, settle down. Like, this is 3 years in a row we go to the conference finals. It's a great team, right? But I think there is expectation and pressure that comes to what you bring to the table.
Yeah.
And if you bring to the table that you're a conference finals team, you want to get to the next step. You want to win. You want to get to the finals. I would say with Tyler Seguin-Duffer, what's his health situation? He missed a better part of last year.
It's obviously pretty good based on how it ended last year.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you let him play this year, and it wouldn't be a surprise to me to say that, oh, maybe he's not fully healthy at the end of this season. Maybe there's a long-term IR situation. And we know that
there
is going to be some changes to the new CBA, right? In a year from now when it comes to long-term injured reserve, whatever. But I think there could be some wiggle room for the Dallas Stars when it comes to Tyler Seguin. I think Jamie Benn is playing his last season. I think Jamie Benn in Dallas, it's over in a year from now. They're going to have to move on from him.
Well,
would you take Jamie Benn on a one-year deal?
Let's no, say you've asked me this now. Before. I would not.
You would not? Okay.
No.
I don't know that the performances are there anymore. And I really, to be honest with you, the thing that bugs me the most about Jamie Benn is, although he's a really gritty type veteran, he takes the stupidest of penalties all the time. That puts your team in a bad spot. Like, look at the playoffs this year. If there was a bad penalty to be taken, it was Jamie Benn with the Dallas Stars.
Well, somebody has to do it. Kadri used to own it for a while.
Kadri didn't take bad penalties. He took bad suspensions. Well, that's even worse. Always in the same corner, always in the same way. But you're right. Like, but I don't know. I mean, Jamie Benn wanted to play another year, and all he wanted is another $1 million contract or whatnot. There'd be a lot of teams calling. It's going to be on him. But I think this is the last year in Dallas for him.
All right. That I think, unless you want to maybe one last comment on, or ranking, if you will, of Jake Oettinger. And how does he bounce back after the hurt feelings and hurtful ending to the year? And I'm making this a little more ridiculous, but it is a fact.
But I think that there's a concern for me for Jake Oettinger. And it's not so much that the coach threw you under the bus and he pulled you. It's the fact that in a game where you needed to be good,
right,
you didn't make the saves. And there was games like that during the season. I think there's a real adjustment to Jake Oettinger's game that needs to be made. He is good. He has great instincts. But he does, and the goalie nerds out there, the goalie moms, the goalie dads, the goalies out there will know, he glides out at the shooter a lot. And he locks into the shooter. And when he glides at the shooter too much, it reminds me a little bit of Luukkonen when he goes and gets himself out of the net facing at the shooter so much that there's lateral plays that he gets beat on. Or he's off his angle a little bit. I think there's a real adjustment that Jake Oettinger needs to make to his game to maybe get this team over the conference finals hump. But I think this is the perfect time to do it. You're getting a new coach. The team is good. Make that adjustment and see where it takes you in the first 3 months of the season.
Do you think they will be in the final next year?
Nope.
All right.
Well, and I like that team. But they did lose Mikael Granlund, who was really good with them.
For a short period
of time. Denny Dodonov, who had great depth for them, and Mason Marchment. Those three alone is significant pieces that they lost from last year.
They're pieces.
Put that on a meme.
There's a few of them out there. Build your own Sabres schedule with the 10-game flex plan. And while Marty flexes in his studio, you can choose 10 home games this season and get the home opener included in your plan at no additional cost. So you get savings off of single game pricing, playoff priority, and more. Sabres.com/flex. Birthdays and more when we come back.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
See what I did there, Marty? Bought us a little extra time in the final segment. Do you like that?
How'd you do that?
Eh, broke early. You mentioned Howard Simon yesterday. Was in my blood to, like, you know, buck the trend and, you know, do
late
things.
For the break. Late for the break. Yes, yeah, early exactly. For the break.
Now, I'm going to present a number to you. It's 133. What is the significance of that?
133.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say kickoff on Saturday for the preseason game, but no, that's at 1 p.m. And the NFL, by the way, the NFL does something that the NHL needs to start doing. Is when they say it's a 1 p.m. kickoff, at 1 o'clock, the ball's in the air. Like, the team that the CBS or whatever station comes on, welcome to Bills, and then boom, kickoff happens. Like, it's not a 1:10. It's not a 1:12, a 1:18.
7:07. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like, let's go. When we have a 7 o'clock game, I want a 7:05 at the latest puck drop.
Well, 133 is the air quality index for today, which is unhealthy for sensitive groups. And when I read that, it got me thinking, like, what about the groups that are listening to us and whether we should have a daily on-air quality rating?
I think it was 160 yesterday. It's gotten better because it was really bad yesterday.
It's noticeable.
Canadian wildfires and the smoke is coming across the Ontario and down. It's like hitting a wall, but we are into it. Yes.
Now, did you ever have aspirations of professional sports ownership?
No.
Not even in a minority role in any minor league or anything?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, the reason I bring it up, one of my favorite Sabres in the last decade, Jamie McGinn, who only spent 63 games here before being dealt away. He was just like, I don't know. You just connect with certain people. Like, you just, I don't know. He was just such a good guy. And he was always really excited about what they were going to venture into from a family standpoint. So the McGinn family, including his parents and his brothers, they have a large stake in an SPHL team in Roanoke, Virginia. They're called the Rail Yard Dogs. Their colors are royal blue, gold, and white.
Oh, Sabres.
They won
colors.
A championship a couple of years ago for the first time, and their attendance has gone up and up and up every year under the McGinn family ownership. So Jamie turns 37 today. Happy birthday, Jamie McGinn. I just think it's a really cool family story that they have this ownership in an SPHL team.
It's a great family story. And I mean, that's the thing. Do you think of the Hunters in London, Ontario, owning the London Knights, right? Like, I love when family, the Chenault, like, Chenault was a big name in Western Canada when it comes to the CHL, the WHL, whatnot. So the dad, I think, or the grandfather was the commissioner of the CHL.
Ed,
and then they were great. So it's great when family get together to own some, you know, junior teams or lower side of professional hockey. That's awesome.
If you had more disposable income, what minor league sport would you invest in?
I would definitely invest in hockey. I would go to hockey route.
You're a man of many interests, so this is a valid question.
Yeah, but I would go in hockey, and I think, like, I grew up in Quebec City, so obviously junior hockey in Quebec City, now that there's no NHL, and there hasn't been NHL since the mid-90s, it's the biggest show, right? They have the big building, 19,000 seats building for a junior team. They don't have 19,000 in there, but they have probably 8,000 or 9,000. That's where I would go. But that ownership group in Quebec City, they make good money. They're the Tanguays, which they own, like, furniture stores, kind of like the
Comrie's.
The Comrie, Eric Comrie, with you know, Bricks in Western Canada.
The Brick,
so it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, speaking of ownership, congrats to Seneca Nation on their purchase of the Rochester Nighthawks today from the Pegulas. This is really great news for the Nighthawks and the city of Rochester in maintaining, you know, really the brand, the history, the legacy of the game in that city is deep, and really great to have, you know, owners so invested. And here on August 5th, we're still a month away from Matthew Schaefer's 18th birthday. Is he going to play full-time for the Islanders this year?
He'll start the season, he'll play his 9 games, and they'll decide after that.
All right, and we'll see you tomorrow with another Team of the Day on Sabres Live.